Hello and welcome to What Else Do You? I'm your host, Masao. I'm an indie producer in Montreal, working for Studio Cut to Bits. And today, our guest is Rebecca Valentine. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, I am a reporter, a games reporter with IGN. My background is in games business journalism. I worked at gamesindustry.biz for several years before this. And I like to write about how the games that I love get made.
I love your articles, by the way. I've told you several times, but I think you're, I mean, I'm personally interested in the economics of video games. So like, I guess like the Venn diagram of my interest and your writing is pretty crossed over, but yeah.
I have amazing news. We're recording this right before earnings week. So we got to prepare for like 2 weeks of that.
Yeah. Earnings is always very interesting. But that's what you do professionally, but this podcast is called What Else Do You Do? So what else do you do, or did you do?
Yeah,
or did you think you were going to do?
it's a did I do in this case, because you invited me here to talk about the fact that at one point in my life, around early college time, I was very, very serious about joining. I was very Catholic, and I was very, very serious about joining the convent and becoming a nun. And like I had a whole plan around it, and I was getting ready to do it, and then I didn't, and now I'm very far from that. But it was a huge part of my life for a very long time.
Yeah. So how do we start? Okay. Well, when did you decide that was something you wanted to do?
Yeah. Wow. It's such a weird thing to sort of unpack, and I don't really talk about this all that often. So I was raised Catholic from the Midwest. I'm from Kansas. I grew up in a very, very Catholic city. My family was Catholic. It really wasn't them. Like, I think some people get the wrong idea and think that I was raised in this like super hyper religious environment. And I don't think that was quite true. You know, my parents were Catholic. We went to church every Sunday. And, you know, they, you know, sent me to Catholic school. They wanted me to be a good kid. Like, they took like the religious events in a Catholic child's life, you know, seriously. But they weren't like hardcore, you know. They were just like fine. They were just people, you know, who happened to be Catholic. But I went to Catholic school, and it was, faith was always something that, like, growing up, I internalized and I cared about a lot. Like, as a kid, I was always, you know, kind of like the childish, you know, oh, I want to do the right thing. Like, I don't want to mess with God, right? Like, God loves me, like internalizing all those things and believing them very, very seriously. And in high school, I think this was sort of brought about by a series of crises of faith. So in high school, I went through one where I started hanging out online, actually, like, because that was around the time when, you know, video game forums and stuff were coming up. And I started to meet other people who were not Catholic, because I grew up in a very Catholic community surrounded by other people who were varying degrees of Catholic, serious, not serious. And I started meeting other people who were not, and they had different belief systems. And this is the time when, you know, on any forum, if you were ever on any kind of forum, like discussion board back in the day, there was always like, you know, an off topic section where people were doing debates, right? You know, like, that's just the kind of thing we all did. And so there was, of course, a topic for people to talk about religion and debate it, because we were all teenagers and we all thought we were like had superior belief systems. And I hung out in there a lot. And it was very eye opening for me to encounter other people who believed as firmly in completely different things as I did in my own faith. And they explain that to you in Catholic school. They say, you know, like, yeah, not every, there's other faiths in the world. They're wrong, whatever. But I mean, that's what they said. That's not what I'm saying now. But you don't, it doesn't really prepare you to actually, this sounds like so stupid, but I was like, I was a teenager. I didn't know. And you meet other people with other belief systems. And I started to have a crisis of faith, because I met a couple other Christians there who were not Catholic, who had like slightly differing beliefs about God and what he wanted of us and what it meant to have faith. And I started questioning my own faith, and I did this very quietly. You know, I never talked to my parents about it. I didn't talk to any of the religious leaders in our church or at my school, but I started quietly exploring and reading books and asking myself what it meant, because this is something in high school that was very important to me. And I feel like I'm getting like off track here, but I think it all matters, because the point is that I think it was something that was more important to me. It was important to me in a way that it wasn't necessarily as important to a lot of other kids my age who were going to the same Catholic school. Like we all went to the religion classes. Like we had theology courses, we went to mass, we had like prayers and things like that in school, but most people just go through the motions, right? And this is, for whatever reason, however it happened, having this moment where I realized this was something I cared about, but also something that I maybe wasn't quite on the right track for, I don't know, it started something in me. And so I started I started getting up very, very early in the morning and going to this thing called morning prayer, which if you're Catholic, you know, the liturgy, it's been a while, so I don't remember all the words anymore, but like, it's basically this book of prayers, and they have them for different times of day. So there's, you know, morning prayer, evening prayer, night prayer. There's some that are more common that people do than others, but not like, this is not a thing that every Catholic does. This is the thing that like nuns and monks do. And then like people who are very
older,
very serious.
Older ladies. People,
yes. Yeah. My solution to hearing other forms of faith that I didn't understand, but was to not necessarily dig in really hard to my own, but to like dig in very hard to like the prayer aspects of my own, because I knew those were solid. Like I felt like I could talk to God and get an answer. So I started getting up really early and going to morning prayer on some days, because they had that in the little chapel in our school, but like two people went. It was like nobody went to this. If you're Catholic, you know, there's Eucharistic adoration, where they take the Eucharist, which is the thing that Catholics believe, the bread that is converted into the literal body of Christ, and they put it in this thing called a monstrance, and it's this big gold thing. It's like a little, imagine like a candlestick, but then at the top there's this big sun, like a big gold sun, and then they put the little communion host right in the middle of it, and they put that up on the altar, and you go and you pray like in that room, and it's supposed to be like very sacred and holy and cool. And I would get up every morning before school, especially once I started driving. I'd get up at like 5 in the morning to go sit for an hour and pray and do this before school, at least once a week. I started going to mass like during the week, which is again like it's like an extra thing to do. You don't have to do this. And then I think the other thing that like really earned the ire of my peers when I was in school was I started like digging into kind of like all the different like very specific Catholic rules that people just sort of ignore because we don't want to do them. And one of them is, this is like an old one that they got rid of after a big church council years and years ago. But the whole idea that when women go to mass, they should be veiled. And so I bought myself a veil.
Oh, wow.
That I wore to all church services. Baffling everyone, because kids don't do this.
It's pretty extreme. Yeah,
even now, like in 2021, it's even rare. This was, and when was that? When was I in high school? This would have been, oh geez, I don't remember when I was in high school. 2009, 2008, something like that. This would have been like then. So this is still very weird. Like people did not do this, and it got like weird attention in high school, because people are Catholic, but they're not that Catholic. And this sort of like spurred me forward, like, oh, they're mocking me. That must be, and I'm doing something right. And so I kept exploring, you know, I kept looking into other forms of Christian faith quietly on the side. I went through my confirmation, which was terrifying because I didn't know at the time that Catholic was the Christian that I wanted to be. But I did a lot of self-examination. I talked to some mentors in the church, and I ultimately decided that that's what I wanted to do. And so I did confirmation, and I stuck with it. And then college started approaching. And as college was approaching, I was trying to figure out what it was that I wanted to do. And the only thing that made sense for me, I started reading this book called The Imitation of Christ, which I do not recommend. It's this book that basically takes, I don't want to rag on faith, because I think there are some, I'm not Catholic anymore. I think there are some very beautiful things in the Catholic faith, and if somebody has found this book like helpful or valuable or meaningful to them, I don't want to like rag on them for it. But in the place that I was at, I was starting to go down this weird rabbit hole of like thinking that no matter what I did, I wouldn't be able to make God happy, and I wouldn't be able to be like the perfect holy person that I was trying to be. Like I had these doubts about Catholicism, and while simultaneously having those doubts, I was still this Catholic kid. So I was like afraid that having those doubts was going to send me to hell. I was reading this book called The Imitation of Christ, which the primary like message I remember from that book is that there's not really anything you can ever do right. Honestly, like you have to, if you are aware, God is merciful and whatever, but if you are aware of what God wants you to do and just, you know, deliberately don't do that thing, then like you're screwed. You're unholy. Like you're sinful. Like, what are you doing? Like if you have been blessed to have been told the things that God wants of you, then you have to do those things. And so I came away with this idea that if I knew that the best path was to serve God, like without compromise and without like giving up everything. If I knew that that was the best path, then not doing it would therefore be like the worst choice I could possibly make. And so I was very serious about this, and I started like donating a bunch of my clothes. I toured multiple convents. I also did a lot of this. I was doing without talking to my parents about it. I mean, I was like 17, 18. I had a car. Like I was a good kid. I wasn't like out, you know, I was obviously not out, you know, doing things that they found questionable, but I would. Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to say something.
Oh no. I was going to wait until you were done. And then I was going to ask you a question.
I would go, I toured convents. I talked to nuns. I talked to some of my teachers about this thing I was considering. And I was prepared. I was fully prepared to do this after high school. Like I was like investigating where I would want to go. But I had like multiple teachers.
Straight into
after high school. Not a even convent.
Not even theology.
No. Well, but that's the thing. I had multiple teachers and also multiple nuns, God bless them, stop me and say, hey, go to college. Like you, because I had a scholarship to a local Catholic college. And I had my parents were like able to help support me through college. Like I'm very privileged, and like they recognized that, and they were like, "Hey, you have the opportunity to go to college, get a degree, and then after that, you know, come back. Like get a degree in theology if you want, fine, but you know, don't skip that." Then they told me that it was like very useful, basically, to have sisters with degrees because you know they can do things out, they can do work out in the community sometimes that mm-hmm. you can't do without. So that was what ultimately convinced me. So I went to a Catholic college in my hometown on a scholarship, and my first year there, I could have done a theology major, but I decided that especially with my plans, I wanted to teach. So okay. I was in their education program. And then I was doing a minor in theology. And so my plan was to basically do this, then go to the convent after, and then like maybe eventually get to teach in one of the religious schools locally. Like that was my whole plan. I don't even remember what the original question was. I've gotten so far off track explaining how this happened.
When did you decide that that's something you wanted to do? But so yeah. Can well, I ask so
that
you a question?
That was when I decided somewhere in there.
Okay, so it sounds like it was very like, it sounds like it was kind of motivated more by fear than something that you actively wanted to do. Is that correct?
I think that's partially correct. I guess that is how I made it sound, right? I think that is partially true. I think at that age I was in kind of a dark place. There's a word that I was using at the time. I think like religiously people would tell me that's not what I was experiencing, but there was a word I was using at the time, scrupulosity, which is sort of this like, and I've seen like writings that, you know, attributes it to like a form of like anxiety that is very specifically religious. I don't even know if I'm using the word right now. They might've, you know, like changed what that means now, but basically this idea that no matter what you do, you're basically always sinning. Like no matter what, there's no way to escape that. And you have to do your absolute best to escape that. And I got like really into like the writings of Soren Kierkegaard, this whole idea that in relation to God, we humans are always wrong. But that's like glorious and beautiful because if God is like all powerful, all knowing and all good, then why would you want to be right? Like you suck. It was
all like, this is fascinating because I grew up in Japan. So yeah. Like my like cosmology is very different.
Yeah.
And I went to Catholic school as well. So
But I think too,
it was a really weird experience to like, so I met Christians for the first time really in high school because I grew up in Japan and I moved to California when I was 15 to go to high school. And my parents put me in Catholic school because they were like, the public school has like, you know, metal detectors and drug dealers, like maybe maybe we'll put him to public private school, and the only private school in the area was Catholic. So yeah, I went from like completely secular society with no externalized form of like deities. Like Japanese concepts of deities are mostly like, well, if you're Buddhist, it's internal, like you're part of the divine. And if you're talking about Shinto, then like mountains and like trees are divine. So like very different than like there's the concept of good and then there's you and there's nothing in between. Like that was fascinating. I think I was going with this. Oh, but I guess you were talking about Kierkegaard and like kind of the relationship with God.
I think the thing that I want to be clear on, because again, like when I tell people that I was like very Catholic and in the Midwest for most of my life, and I think people get a specific picture of me that is not accurate, because the thing that I think what I was in like, it was kind of extreme. I think using the word extremism is not right, because that paints a picture that is not. It's not the same.
A 17-year-old that wants to be a nun is pretty extreme. Like
it is pretty extreme. I don't think
it's unusual.
It's not extremism in the sense that people think about, like Christian extremism, right? Because it wasn't. I was trying so hard to be good. I wanted more than anything to be good and to be right and to be holy, and I just felt like it was. I felt simultaneously like it was unobtainable, but that I had to try anyway. Like there was, it was this impossible feat that I could never do, but the most important thing was for me to try every single day. And I think I was like in a dark place in some ways. Like I was like very depressed a lot of that time. But
well, it sounds terrifying because it was, you know, because like no matter like, you know, like it's very difficult to be in that kind of a like a powerless situation, because like you're doing your best, but like you don't have control over this, and you know. It's it sounds terrifying, really.
And I didn't have a whole lot of friends who were like experiencing the same thing too. I had one friend who was kind of in the same boat as me, and we did talk about this. Everyone else was just like lighting up, like it's fine, like this is not a big deal. What is wrong with you?
Yeah.
But it was also like really beautiful, man. Some of the prayers are so beautiful, and like I sung a lot, like in the choir and you know, song leading at mass, and did a lot of the readings. I read the whole Bible, like all these things, and like some of it's really, really beautiful. Like some of the imagery, some of the music, just some of the writing. It can be like really terrifying. It can be really messed up sometimes, but it can also be really, really beautiful. And I think finding there was like an element of spiritual calm and spiritual trust that I had then that I don't think I've quite been able to reclaim since, because there's just no equivalent in the secular world. There's just not, like maybe meditation, but not really. It's weird because I think I had a lot of other things going on in my brain that were sort of at the time as a teenager, because you know we're all hormones, that were sort of contributing to this weird scrupulosity I was experiencing, and that probably put me on this path in the first place, which is, you know, why 17-year-olds should not just jump into the convent. Like you should, you know, probably do something else for a little bit first, and you know, grow up a little bit more before you make giant life-altering decisions. So it's good that I didn't, but yeah, like I think there was beauty in it. Like, I think it was like motivated by fear, but I think it was also like motivated by a deep love of this thing that I didn't understand and couldn't see, that I was confident, completely confident, loved me. And that was really cool.
That must be very comforting. Like I've never experienced faith in God. And sometimes I'm like, yeah, that must be really nice to think that like there's an all-powerful entity that loves you deeply.
Yeah. And the ways in which like the stuff that I was getting into and the reading and writing I was getting into talked about that love too, like really beautiful. Like when you like the sort of, oh, for God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son, the John 3:16 thing that everyone quotes, like they sort of just like quote it offhand. But when you really like think about it, like think hard about it, like some person that is just like, this is going to sound like very evangelical. I'm not Christian anymore, but I'm not like trying to evangelize here. But that very concept, like the idea that there is some deity that is all powerful, that could do literally anything at all with a snap of his fingers, that doesn't even matter, designed this world, made us and said that, you know, we were good, created us and felt that this was like good art that he made. And then when we messed up, voluntarily told his son, hey, the only way, not even the only way, but like the most meaningful way to solve this problem of sin is for you to go down and go through this like horrendous, torturous death and then, you know, resurrect yourself. And there's like a lot more theology to that, but like that's such a weird, like extreme thing to do for someone you love, but it's like, so it's so intense. And that, you know, if you really believe that that's something that happened, it can be really powerful, I think.
For sure. So let's kind of skip to like, how did it end? Like when did you know that you're not going to be a nun?
Or
when
did you decide
that wasn't, how did that happen?
It was so slow as to be unremarkable. It's funny. You know, I went to college and I started my first semester. I was there education and theology, and I was just taking gen ed classes. And I was bored because I went to like a very good high school, you know, like a Catholic private school. So the gen ed classes were all stuff that I had just learned my senior year. So I was like very bored. And I started reading books, just fiction. I wasn't even reading philosophy at that point. I was just, you know, reading fiction. But one of my classes was Intro to Philosophy. And so I was taking Intro to Philosophy and reading about just different philosophers over the years, you know, starting with like Plato and Aristotle and like moving up, you know, through history and reading all these different schools of thought. And this is just an intro course. It wasn't an ethics class, but it's kind of where the wheels started turning. And then my second semester was when I did take ethics, because those are the two classes you're required to take in philosophy at my school. It was Intro to Philosophy and ethics. I started taking ethics, and you know, this whole like very deep faith thing that I had was very motivated by me wanting very, very badly to be good. And this ethics class was basically a tour of all these people throughout history who had thought about what does it mean to be good. And so again, wheels just start turning and I start thinking about this problem like a little more deeply. And then my second semester there, I'm still an education major, but I have started dipping my toe into an English class, a literature class. I don't remember why I did this, but I took a literature class it was world literature. And I started reading myths from around the world, you know, like Epic of Gilgamesh. We read, you know, parts of the Odyssey. We read, you know, all these different like religious and not religious myths. And I, again, like just bit by bit understanding other types of faith, other types of people, other viewpoints, you know, where all these other philosophies, other ideas about how people can be good, what it means to be good, what it means to be a person. And the more I thought about it, like, it just like slowly started diluting all the other things that I was feeling, like really slowly over time. And I fell in love with literature because I spent like my whole first year just reading books because I was bored. And then the beginning of my second semester in classes where I read books assigned to me. And I very slowly started switching my majors. I switched to education in English in my second year of college. And then I believe by the end of my second year of college, I had dropped education entirely and I was an English and philosophy major. And I think there was still a lingering idea in my mind, like, oh, you know, maybe I'll go to nun school. But It just gradually filtered out over time. I did the Catholic thing for quite a while longer. It was a Catholic school. We had specifically one floor of one of the dorms. It was called Metanoia, and it was I can't remember what that meant. That word was like significant in some way. I've like filtered so much of this out of my brain, but it was specifically like a hall for Catholic kids who like wanted to be very serious and like do service work and like get together and do morning and evening prayer together. And so I lived up there for a year and did like all the prayers with them and did all the service projects. And I, you know, I hung on to Catholicism for a while, but I think like the thing, it was just like this slow and gradual change where I went from, I guess I started finding like other meanings, if that makes sense. Like I wanted so badly to be good for the sake of God, but I think like very slowly over time, meeting people who thought differently from me, you know, reading books about different schools of thought, you know, reading different myths, reading different literature, I started thinking about the different ways one can be good and what that means. And I think also around that time, I was becoming more and more aware of like the political situation in the world. Because I grew up like, I mean, I grew up very much with the idea that, and I apologize for this, that, you know, okay, well, you know, LGBTQIA folks, like, we love them, but they're wrong, right? Like, that's what I grew up with. And turned out I'm, you know, bi and ace myself, but I didn't know that for years. And that was like around the time that started to wither away too. And, you know, some other like political views that I held, not because I had any political views, but because, you know, they had just been like ingrained with me over the years, you know, like abortion is wrong, things like that.
That's what you were raised with.
Right. You know, birth control, evil, all these other things. And this is around the time when I started meeting other people and like hearing the reasons why maybe they felt differently about that, you know, actually meeting other queer folks for the first time. Like, I mean, people aren't out in Catholic school. They're sure not. So,
you but know, they're actually, there.
They're right? there. They're there, but they weren't talking to me about it. I wouldn't talk to me about it. God. I certainly wouldn't. But, you know, meeting other people who were out and loud about it for the first time and, like, understanding their and listening to their viewpoint and, like, you know, trying to reckon this thing that had been ingrained with me, which is, you know, love other people, take care of other people, love other people. Trying to, like, square that with the other thing, which is, oh, these people are wrong and we need to tell them about it. Because when you're looking at somebody, when you're having a conversation with someone who says, yeah, I'm gay, like, what of it? Like, how do you reckon loving that person with going, yeah, that's actually wrong and you're going to hell? Like, how do you, it was like crashing into itself. It didn't make sense. And again,
I've heard people, like, very Christian people say, like, well, if you truly believe and you think that these people are going to go to hell, like, you know, it's up to you to like tell these people who you love that they need to change their ways because you don't want them in eternal torment, which I guess, I mean, makes sense in their logic, I guess.
Yeah. And that's what I was told. But like, it doesn't, for me, I mean, I'm sure it works for other people, but because people obviously do this, but for me, it didn't work in practicality. I couldn't do it. Like, and I think I was also trying to reconcile this with this belief that I had that, you know, God was all merciful and good and loved his creation. And so, because the God that I had in my mind was a very like loving, joyous God. Like creation is joy. Creation is good. Life is good. God invented humor. God invented, you know, nature and happiness and all the nice things that we experience every day. Right. And so like this is just so at odds with all these other things. And as I become an adult and become aware of political issues, become aware of things like systemic poverty, start to learn, you know, like, okay, maybe things like racism are more than just, oh, you know, Jim Crow laws that we don't, you know, I had not ever thought about before. Right. Like learning about like societal issues and sort of seeing what stance the church that I had followed my whole life was taking on those and what it was actually practically doing to address the queer community, to, you know, address all these other things and trying to reconcile that with how I wanted to treat the people right in front of me. It just, at some point it didn't work out. And I graduated, well, my junior year, somebody that I was friends with that I'd had a crush on for a long time, you know, finally, like we started dating. And that was kind of, I guess, the last vanishing of thoughts that I wanted to be a nun. And we ended up getting married and we're divorced now, but we ended up getting married right out of college. And so obviously I wasn't becoming a nun anymore, but there was a point during that time when we were married, like a couple of years in, where I was in church and the priest gave some speech. I don't remember what political event had just happened. Might've been like one of the big legalizations of gay marriage. I don't remember what it was. But basically the priest got up and gave this big speech about how the youth were deluded into thinking that this was the right path and, you know, all this other stuff. And at the end of this homily, everyone started clapping. And like, I just sat there and I was like, you know, I can't do it anymore. And so I didn't walk out. I wish I had walked out in the moment, because if you know where the homily is in the mass, it's halfway through. So like, I should have walked out in that moment. I didn't. I stayed for the whole mass. But I didn't go back. And I tried to kind of like think, okay, well, maybe I can still be Catholic and not go to church. But no,
it's yeah, just, that one, that's a tough one. I mean, yeah. Catholics, it is very tied to the church, right?
It is. It's tied to community. But I, you know, I didn't go back, and I am now, I guess I'm probably agnostic. I think that's probably the best word for it. You know, I'm 30 now. I've had life experiences between now and then that have sort of changed my viewpoint further. But yeah, it was such a slow, gradual walking away from that. It came on. I feel like it came on very quickly when I was in high school and in a flurry of like teenagers. Some people have like hormones and have like dramas and breakups and date people and cliques and stuff like that. I just had drama with Jesus. That's what I did throughout all of high school.
I don't know. It I mean, I think, you know, the vector might have been different, but it does sound like a very teenage moment.
It was.
Well, okay. So let's, I don't know how we're going to get back to games, but let's try. So what do you think? I'm not even sure how I'm going to ask this question, but
you can just ask it. Like, there's you told me what these questions were before, yeah. And like I think there's a way to talk about them.
Okay, so what do you think you got out of kind of your relationship with the church and your, you know, your relationship with your faith that you no longer get? Oh, well, that you don't get from your work in the games industry.
I mean, I think there was definitely a certainty about it. There was a stability and a certainty about it and a groundedness that I don't think I have anymore. You know, I went from thinking that my life was very set for me. Like I knew at that time, like what I wanted to do. Like I was going to, I had like a set trajectory for my life. Every day was like very, I mean, some of that was just being in school and being a kid, but some of it was, you know, like very, like all the Catholic rituals are set, like they're in books, like you always know what to say. That's like a wonderful thing about Catholicism, I think, is you're never just wondering and thinking, oh man, what do I say? I don't know. How do I pray? Well, it's right there. It's like right in front of you. You got a book, you can read it. It's great. But I mean, also just this sort of like knowledge and this stability and this groundedness, this knowing that like God is always going to be there. He's not going anywhere. If you mess up, you can come back. Like he's going to take care of you. Even when things seem like they just suck ass, like I wouldn't have said ass back then. like it's going to be okay. And if I, you know, when I was thinking I was going to go into the convent, like that seemed like such a nice, I don't want to say it's a cop-out because it's like a huge sacrifice for so many people, but I think
comfort in the ritual, right?
To me personally, like this is my personal experience, not, I love nuns. I'm not insulting nuns. It felt like looking back, it feels like it was almost a cop-out for all the hard things I didn't want to have to confront about myself. Because like how easy would it have been to just, you know, give up my stuff at that point and go live and just have my life set for me, like be taken care of for the rest of my life and pray. And be like fairly secure in the knowledge that God was going to be there and take care of me and do service and like know that I'm good. Like have like some kind of security that I'm doing my best. I'm doing absolutely everything in my power to be good and right and take care of other people and help the world. Like that's so much easier than living in the world day to day, you know? Like every day I got, and I do, I guess this is sort of the tie-in to my work, but like, I mean, yeah, I write about video games, you know, woo, video games, but I write about like hard stuff. I write about labor issues. I write, you know, I've like written about workplace abuses. I've written about like hard stuff. And I know it's video games, but it's like human beings. It's people.
You don't have to qualify this for the audience. Like, yeah. You definitely write about real stuff. I mean,
I do sometimes write fluff pieces too, because it's fun. When I like a video game, I'll say it. But yeah, like it's so hard to sit down every day and be like, okay, like how do I deal with other human beings? Like how do you talk about the ways in which human beings are not being treated like human beings in a way that is useful and helpful and good and doesn't hurt victims? You know, like there's so many. I feel like I deal with like complicated moral choices every day. And I think no matter what, everybody has to deal with that. But there's sometimes a part of me that misses when it was just all easily laid out for me, right? Like ethics, whatever. No, I just ask God what is the thing that he said in this book that tells me what the next thing I should do is or what the right choice in this situation is. Like now I have to do what every other human being has to do and sit here and like think about who might be hurt by this, and you know, who, what is the right thing to say, and which direction do I punch? Like, it's, I don't know. It's harder. I miss the stability. I miss it being easy. It doesn't sound like it was easy when I was describing it, but compared to being compared to living out in the world, I think maybe there are elements of it that would have been easier.
Well, certainly a lot less ambiguity.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's one way of dealing with, you know, the stress and anxiety of living out in the world, I guess.
Yeah. And I don't want to like diminish what people who do choose that lifestyle do. Because I think everyone's journey in this respect is like very, very personal. But I just think for me, it would have been an out from making hard choices and confronting myself and confronting who I am and confronting the kind of person that I want to be. And I'm glad I didn't take it. I mean, for many reasons, I'm glad I didn't take it. But even just on like a personal level is what it is anyway. But like on a, I don't know, like on a self actualization level, I'm glad that I didn't do that. Because I think I like the person that I've become, and I guess I don't know what kind of person I would have become had I done that. But I like what I've accomplished and figured out about myself without that.
How do you think it shaped you as a creative person? How do you think it affects your creative output and process?
I think it kind of comes back to sort of the question that I was always trying to answer with myself, which was, you know, how do I be good? I want to be good. And like, I guess I'm still asking that question in the work that I do. Cause like, it's weird. I know creative is there because you talk to game devs. Journalism, I think, is maybe a little more of a craft than an art. People on Twitter can debate about that. I don't really know what the answer is there. Someone can figure that out. I don't know that a lot of what I do maybe falls under the creative or art category. Maybe it does.
I think you sell yourself short. I think you have a perspective and I think you choose subjects and you know,
that's fair.
You have a point to make. None of this is like, you know, mechanical in my opinion.
Yeah. No, there's no such thing as objectivity, even if you want it, because ultimately it's human beings doing the writing. We try, but there's only so much you can do. Yeah, but I think the fact that I went through this sort of weird crucible of faith at one point, and the fact that I was so serious about trying to be good and to be better and to make things better for the world around me. Like very deeply, like not just in sort of a platitude sense, but it was something that I was just like very, like it was my whole person. It was all I could think of was like I'm not, sorry, this is like a hard thing to talk about. I never talk about this.
This is great, by the way. I think this is like, I think your story is a beautiful story.
Oh man, I never talk about this.
I really appreciate you sharing this with me.
No, of course. It goes back to this question of like, and I think it's a double-sided coin. It goes back to this question of wanting very, very badly to be good. And I think ultimately that has shaped the direction I've gone with games writing. Because I think like this is like irrelevant, but I stumbled into games writing. This was never on the path. This was never part of the plan. It was an accident. I started blogging just because I was bored while I was doing technical writing. I ended up starting blogging at a place called GameSide, and just writing again, like fluff stuff about games, like, oh, the game was announced. Cool. Fun. And I never like at the time it was just for goofs. I never thought it was a career. And even when I started to think of it as a career, I was thinking, you know, like more of the same, like doing reviews, doing like fun features and stuff. I was not thinking of it in a serious way. But when the opportunity to go to games industry presented myself and I took it, because God, it was a full-time job in the industry, of course I was going to take it. It very just quickly just clicked into place that was the thing I wanted to do. Like, I wanted to tell these stories of people who are making this art. And once I started telling those stories, I realized very quickly that if there was anything I could write or anything I could do that was going to maybe make their experiences doing that art like slightly better. That was something that I wanted. Like it was like this idea of being able to do something that makes things. And God, this sounds like so like puffing at myself. And because I think I like, you know, try and fail and succeed in different degrees every single day. So this is not like me trying to say, oh yeah, I've made the industry a better place. But it's something I want to do. It's something I want to try to do. And I think like that part of me that had wanted to be good and wanted to put good into the world had been like dormant for a while. And I think when I finally realized that there was an opportunity there to do that, it just like clicked. I was like, because I remember there being like a couple specific moments at games industry where like I had an opportunity and I was like, wait, this is it. This is the thing I want to do. Like not all this other stuff. I mean, that stuff's fun, but whatever I end up writing, whatever career this turns out to be, this is what I want it to be. And so I think in that respect, it shaped things positively. I think on like more of the negative sense, sort of the constant question of I'm not good enough, like that still is there constantly. I know that's something that like most creatives deal with. I can trace mine directly back to that time in my life. Like I still have like a very, I still like sit here and wrestle a lot with this is net, like, you know, I have like a thing I'm working on right now and it's like a big piece and I'm looking at it and it's like all these pages and all these words and I've done like everybody around me is telling me it's good. Literally everybody, my editors, they're like, yes, this is great. We're going to work on it. Like I take edits just fine. We're going to work on it. You know, like anybody who has anything to do with it or is aware of it has said that this is good work and we're going to, you know, make it better, but it is good. And, you know, we're proud of you and you're doing what you need to be doing and you're fulfilling all of your job roles and more. Like no one has a problem with you. And I still sit here and look at this and I'm like, this is not good enough. This is terrible. I'm shit. Like what? Fuck. I'm working on it, you know, therapy, things like that help. But,
I mean, if it makes you feel any better, I talk to a lot of people who feel the same way.
Yeah.
You know, people who are on the top of their industry for whatever they do, who still feel like, you know, somehow they're frauds that are not very good or not as good as people think they are. So I think it's a common feeling.
Oh, I think so too.
Within the industry.
But I think like to tie it back to, you know, what that sort of question of like being good, it's not just is the work good, but like, is this good? Like, is this actually, especially when it's a heavier topic, like that I'm actually writing about like some like issue or some like human thing. It's like, is this going to hurt people? Like, what if it hurts somebody? What if I fuck this up and, you know, someone gets in trouble or like gets harassed or, you know, something like that. And, you know, or what if I write this and I don't know, like if the wrong people listen to this is going to sound like a weird admission, which is not an admission of anything. I'm diligent as hell. Like I sit down and I do like every possible bit of work to make sure everything I write is as accurate as possible. But even when after all that work is done, you still look at it and you're like, what if this is wrong? What if I publish this and everybody just turns around me in a circle and looks at me and says, this is wrong. This is completely wrong. You got it wrong. This is the wrong story. This hurts us. Why did you do this? This is harmful. And that's never happened to my knowledge, to me, but you know, it's still there. I'm working on it. It's getting better.
I think the fact that you care and the fact that you don't want that, I think makes you, obviously it's not like I know anything, but I think the fact that you want those things puts you in a situation where you're less likely to be in that situation.
I think
there are
true.
People, I mean, I'm not saying, there are writers, I think, that are less, you know, concerned with that. And I think there are people who are writing things that do harm people. And I think it's because they don't care. I don't think it's the people who, well, I don't know. What am I saying? I mean, it's not. Okay. Now I'm kind of gotten into doubt spiral myself, but I really do believe that your you know, sincerely held conviction is an asset and definitely, you know, less likely for you to put people in harm's way.
Yeah, I hope that's true. And I know also, you know, I've got a pile of editors who are also, you know, keeping me on my toes, making sure I don't. So, I mean, there's a million reasons why I know those thoughts are not logical, but you know, they're not logical. That's just it. They're, they're brain worms. But you know, we work on them. Everybody works on them slowly over their lives and hopefully gets a little bit better bit by bit.
And, you know, I think it's totally normal that it's scary because, you know, a lot of times you are talking about people who are already marginalized within the industry and people who are already victimized by the industry. So the fact that you don't want to re-victimize them or put them in, you know, harm's way, I think is very natural. Well, it's time to wrap up. So, so the last question, what is something you want people to know about, I don't know, what are we going to talk about? Are we going to talk about Catholicism or, you know, thinking about becoming a nun?
No,
any of those things? Like, let's...
I think faith.
Tell us about something. Yes.
I think faith. You know, I don't... Yeah, I think like right now I'm probably best described as agnostic. Like, I badly want there to be something. But like, as far as like any kind of... I have not received any specific response to my prayers. Like, I have not... I remember the way that I felt when I was a teenager, and like, I can kind of reconcile that with sort of the ways in which I was like all over the place emotionally and other things. But I have not like felt a significant relationship with any deity, and yeah, that's fine. You know, I've come to terms with that personally, but I think there's like parts of faith that are really beautiful. And I think there's a cynicism about faith, and I think it's earned, honestly. But there's a cynicism about faith that a lot of people have, because faith has been used to justify a lot of really shitty things in the world. And that ain't cool. But I do think there are elements of faith that can be really, really beautiful and meaningful. I think there's elements of prayer and ritual and song and people. Like, you know, when you grow up with that kind of Catholicism, you know, you meet like the people with like the weird, loud, angry beliefs that we sort of stereotype and get mad at. And they deserve to be like taken down a peg for like the shit that they say. But you also meet a lot of people who just like very genuinely believe in this stuff, like in their heart of hearts, like they really think like this is real to them. And they like, but they mean it like really well. Like, they genuinely want to take care of their neighbor. They genuinely want to be good. And this is like the system that they have in which to understand what that means. And I don't mean to like, I don't mean to infantilize that either, because I think, again, like, I think faith has been used to like make some beautiful things happen, too. It's so dependent on the people. It's so dependent on the people that are around those people. And it's so dependent on so many things, but I don't know. I think like, I think my takeaway would be just like that faith can be really, really lovely. And there can be something meaningful and powerful in it. And I don't know, I've done like some meditative stuff, but I haven't quite found anything that makes in secular life that grounds me in the same way that like prayer did back when I still believed that was an effective tool. And I don't know that I ever will, and I'm okay with that. But it was really cool when I had it. So, you know, this is not an invitation to convert me. I'm like really happy and like self-actualized in my understanding of faith in myself. And, you know, I'm doing my best here. And if I die and find out that there was some God with a rule system I didn't understand, like that I did not follow, like, I mean, what was I going to do really? If in relation to God, we are all always wrong anyway, then, you know, we're all going to be wrong, not just me. So it's okay. Maybe we can give ourselves a little grace.
I think that was wonderful. Although I do not subscribe to this. I do not subscribe to this idea of the moral entity that's external to humanity.
Me neither. Like, really, but, you know.
I think good or bad, I think we come up with it. So
yeah, we got to try. I think it matters to try to be good.
We should all try to be good for sure.
We should. But I mean, even if everything is just like inevitable and we're just going to like blow up the universe, or, you know, there's nothing, or it's all just like hell, like whatever.
Even if it's absolutely arbitrary, we still exist and we should be nice to each other. Like,
matters so much.
Yeah, like independently from everything else, we should be nice to each other because
yes.
Why not?
Why not? we can't will a heaven into existence, but we can make things here like a little less hellish for each other. And I think that matters.
For sure. Well, thank you very much. That was that was something. Yeah.
I think that was
a very unique episode, and I enjoyed it immensely. So thank you very much. Have a lovely day.
Thank you for listening. Thank you to Dave Wallace for providing the music, and thank you to Therese Lance for providing the logo. Bye.